You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect. Well, good morning and Merry Christmas. I need every one of you to make sure you have one of these crowns. If you do not, look around you. There are some extras around in some of the extra seats, but every person will need a crown. I'm not asking you. I'm telling you. You need to have a crown. Okay? You're not going to do anything humiliating with it except for maybe put it on your head. But, you know, come on. Let's be kids, okay? Let's have a good old time. So everybody should have a crown. If you don't have a crown, David can help you out and make sure you get one. At the very least, we can draw one with you on your head with a Sharpie. So for some of you, it won't be that obvious. For people with, you know, wonderful head complexions such as mine, it will be all good. So if you need to adjust it, you can. We just assumed that all of you have big heads. Here's the crazy thing, right? This is almost on the full setting, and I don't have hair. I'm not sure what that means about my head. But anyway, you have a crown, and we're gonna talk about crowns today. We're on the last week of Extras Part 1, where we're looking at the cradle. And the story of some of these extras, not the story, but the insight into some of these extras in the story of the birth of Jesus. And in a couple more months, when we get to the month of April, we're going to look at Part 2 with the cross at the month of Easter. And we're going to talk about some of the extras tied to the story. And as the intro said, you know, of course, if you've heard this term before, an extra is a person that's in a story. They're not a star. They're not a main character, but they're there to kind of fill it out. And when it comes to the Christmas story, there are a lot of extras in this story that we today honestly don't even really consider them extras. Of course, they're part of the story. And we talked about a guy named Joseph on the first week, and we know Joseph and Mary, because every Christmas, there he is in brown, and there's Mary in white with her blue. Like, that's the way it is. But really, we don't hear much about Joseph beyond that story. And we talked the second week about the shepherds. We don't hear anything else about the shepherds and how they tie into the story and the fact that this is the idea that Jesus is for the broken, and Joseph was there to show that God keeps his promises. And last week, we look at the Magi and the fact that these guys did not belong in the story at all. But God put them in there on purpose to show that Jesus was for everyone. And so this week we're going to look at another extra, and again we're going to talk about this extra and talk about the crowns that you have. So I want to do this. Like, we have an Instagram page, an Instagram site, Instagram.com/mc3church or at mc3church, and I need to get a picture for our Instagram page. So if you would please just put your crowns on, we'll hit the house lights, you know, we'll take some things there, because everybody wants to know, you know, what in the world are you guys doing in church, and this is it. So if you need to blur your face because you are like wanted by the FBI, you know, feel free to do something like that. And then we'll go from there. I just want to say also how much I appreciate our worship band while we're waiting for the lights to warm up. Of course, Kirk sings. He's one of the guys up here, and he also works for the Postal Service. And some people might not realize this, but this time of year is kind of a big deal for them, and he was here at practice on Wednesday night, ran through all that, here for the sound check this morning, and then got a call around, I don't know, 9:45, and said he can't come back. So he had to go into the office, and he will be there delivering some people's packages that will be waiting on their porches when they get home. I tried not to do it, but they don't listen to me, and they still show up. So anyway, okay, so they did a great job at the literally last second changing everything, and Robert, thanks for mixing all of that and for getting that out of the way. So let's take some pictures here, and then we'll you know, put it together. So smile. They're ready? We're looking, yeah, we're feeling kingly and crownly. Good. This is good. I could do like one of those, what do you call those things? Yeah, that's it. Thank you. Sorry. It's, you know, it's all good. Good. We'll stitch it all together. Now, again, if you need to, if you're wanted by the FBI, let me try another one here. Let's go this way. Oh, right, because it's Instagram. It's going to have to be this way. You're looking so happy. Maybe y'all can pick your nose or something. Good. This is great. When I'm done taking this picture, we'll be done. And you can go home and enjoy the rest of your day. I will say that we do have 45 ornaments still on that tree out there. So we are... It's tight. So if you want to get an ornament, $20. Now he's taking my picture. All right. But anyway, so there's some ornaments out there if you want to pick them up and certainly be a part of helping Tom and Wendy build homes for the people at Trigo. And I will just float out this idea that over the last week we may or may not have been having some conversations about our next missions team that will be heading to Oaxaca. May or may not be happening in the month of May, but we may or may not be telling you more about that later. So I'm just saying it might be a rumor about something like that. And I think that'll be the fifth time we have sent people to Oaxaca in our seven years as a church. So that's pretty incredible. Anyway, so let's talk about crowns. We're going to talk about an extra in the story. And the point today, and we're going to talk about this extra, is this extra, as the title is called, is Herod number one. Because if you actually, you may realize this, maybe you don't, but in the Bible, especially in the New Testament, there are multiple Herods. There are multiple people in the Bible that are named Herod. They're not the same person, which, you know, despite the fact that I tried to make John the Baptist lose his head and then come back to life a few years ago. And if you read, as we'll talk about today, we're going to see that Herod dies. And then later you're going to see that Herod is there for Jesus' crucifixion. And you're going, wait, what happened? Actually, there's multiple Herods, and we'll talk about that. But this week we're going to talk about Herod number one. And he is actually called Herod the Great. And he is a king. Which, of course, is where the crowns tie into that. And here's the point that I want you to understand as we go into this morning. And that is that Herod the Great, and I'm just clarifying that, he's the Great because that's his title. Herod the Great is in the story to show us that Jesus is the king. Herod the Great is in the story to show us that Jesus is the king. And that's important because, you know, actually I was talking to little Lily Bennett. And she said, what are the crowns for? I said, well, you're going to learn about a king. And she said, is it Jesus? Dude, she just totally Jesus juked me. Like, yes, it is Jesus, but that's not really the king we're talking about. But Jesus is the king. But, oh, yes, you're right. Good. But we're talking about this guy, Herod, who was the king. And I want to tell you about him and give you a little bit of background about this guy. He was called Herod the Great, not because I thought he was great, but that was his title, sort of like Alexander the Great. You know, there were other Alexanders in the world, some average Alexanders, some okay Alexanders, and he was called Alexander the Great. That was the title that history gave him. And this particular Herod was titled by history called Herod the Great. And he is a king, and as we're going to see, he had a problem with the fact that there was this other person showing up on the scene, claiming to be king. And again, we'll talk about that because, just spoiler, before you get too excited about wearing your crown, perhaps we try to be king too much instead of letting the true king be king. So, here's the story. Let's read it together if you want. We're going to turn it with the house that's around. We're going to be in Matthew chapter 2. We're actually totally picking up right where we were last week talking about the Magi. And actually, this verse here, we actually looked at last week, but it ties into the story. And beginning in Matthew 2, we're looking at verses 2 to 3. If you have the free YouVersion app, just tap on Matthew there under Bible and tap on 2, and then you can tap on 2 again, and we'll be there. So here is where we're picking up kind of a little part of the story, and then we'll read a new passage in a moment. It says, where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him. That was the Magi speaking, often called the wise men. And again, you can listen to that at mc3church.org/thepoint, or you can just go to, go to our website, click on extras, and you can listen to last week where we talked about the Magi and why they didn't belong in the story. But that's them talking. And it says here that King Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard this. As was everyone in Jerusalem. So these Magi come to Herod, and they say, where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him. And again, we talked about what that star meant last week, so you can go back and listen to that. And then continuing on in verse 13, it says, after the wise men were gone, this is new content, we didn't look at this last week, it's been in your Bible for a long time though. After the wise men were gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, flee to Egypt with the child and his mother. The angel said, stay there until I tell you to return, because Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. That night, Joseph left for Egypt with the child and Mary, his mother, and they stayed there until Herod's death. This fulfilled what the Lord had spoken through the prophet. I called my son out of Egypt. Herod was furious when he realized that the wise men had outwitted him. He sent soldiers to kill all the boys in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old and under, based on the wise men's report of the star's first appearance. Herod's brutal action fulfilled what God had spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. A cry was heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning. Rachel weeps for her children, refusing to be comforted, for they are dead. When Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt. "Get up," the angel said. "Take the child and his mother back to the land of Israel, because those who are trying to kill the child were dead." And I want to just tell you something that's really interesting. It's not really tied into what we're talking about here. But this was written in Greek. That was the language everybody spoke. And this phrase, it says, "Get up, take the child and go," is repeated four times. The angel says, "Get up, take the child and go." And the next verse says, "Joseph got up, took the child and went." And then it says here, "Get up, take the child and go back." And then it says here as we read, "So Joseph got up, returned to the land of Israel with Jesus and his mother," which in Greek was "get up, take the child and return." So he was pretty obedient, like to the word, to the letter. But when he learned of the new ruler of Judea was Herod's son, Archelaus, he was afraid to go there. Then, after being warned in a dream, he left for the region of Galilee. So the family went and lived in a town called Nazareth. This fulfilled what the prophets had said, "He will be called a Nazarene." So, that's the passage. You probably have heard that story. You're somewhat familiar with that story. Again, if you were here last week, we also talked about this is not happening at the manger. The idea that we see at Christmas with Joseph, Mary, and Jesus, you know, and then there's like some sheep, and then the shepherds are there, and then there's three wise men, which of course, biblically, is not actually there. It just says wise men. Three magi, you know, they're there with their three gifts. But that actually, this is probably, at the very least, 6 months, because the word we talked about last week used to describe Jesus was no longer infant. It was referring to child. And as we'll see here with Herod saying, "I want to go 2 years back," it's probably closer to 2 years later that this is taking place. So sorry to wreck some of your Christmas, but that's what's going on. So let's just talk about Herod the Not-So-Great. He was called Herod the Great by history, but he was not so great in terms of what it meant for the culture here, for a Jewish person. Because Jesus was Jewish, Jesus was born into a Jewish culture. And Herod, by the way, his title, Herod, King of the Jews. So, just keep that in the back of your mind. And I just need to understand what's going on here, because we're like, oh, of course the guys went to Herod and said, "Where's the one king?" And for some reason, he went crazy and just started killing babies. So there's a reason for this. So let's talk about Herod a little bit. First of all, his rights. We talked about it in our series last month. It was called After God. And we were looking at the life of David, King David. And God made a promise to David and said, "Look, one of your descendants, generations down the road, will reign as king forever. One of your descendants." And David, actually one of his great-great-grandfathers, was Jacob, and was one of the sons of Isaac. Isaac had two sons, Jacob and Esau. And so, just so you know, David being a descendant of Jacob, so it's Jacob, great-great-great-grandson, David, great-great-great-grandson, eventually there would be the ultimate king who would reign forever on the throne. Herod, who was called King of the Jews, he wasn't even part of the line of David. He wasn't part of the royal line. He wasn't the one that was promised. He wasn't even part of the line of Jacob, which was generations earlier. He was actually a son, a descendant of Esau. And he was Idumean, and I don't know how to pronounce that word. Idumean, I was looking it up and nobody could help me. Idumean, which means he was a descendant of Esau, not of Jacob. So understand this, okay? That we're like, okay, who cares? If you are a Jewish person and someone said, "I am your king," your first question would be, are you part of David's line? Are you one of David's descendants? Because only David's descendants were the king. We talked about that in the Word 3 series a couple years ago, where we traced all of those kings and how it continued through David. And even at the beginning of Matthew, we've got these jacked up genealogies, which talk about the story of how Jesus ties in to David and all this. And so, as a Jewish person, for someone to say, "I'm your king," and you would say, "You're not a descendant of David," no, you're not. You don't belong here. You're not part of that. And then he would say, "Well, I'm a descendant of..." Not even of Jacob, which, by the way, Jacob's name was changed to Israel. And therefore, we know the term Israelites, the children of Israel, of Jacob. Herod wasn't even an Israelite. So he didn't fit in, but here he is claiming to be the king. Anyway, so the second thing you need to understand about his rule. How did he get into this position if he wasn't part of the line of the kings? If he wasn't part of the royal line? Well, first, his rule was given to him by Rome. His rule was Roman. We found out that Herod, and the reason why he was called the Great, was because he was a crazy, tricky, sneaky politician. He was an incredible politician and did incredible things, was able to work things around to his favor. And at some point, he ends up going before Caesar Augustus because Rome was in charge of the entire world. It was the Roman Empire. Anybody that ruled, ruled as a representative underneath the Roman Empire, underneath their rule. And so anybody that called themselves a leader, if they weren't Caesar, only was able to call themselves a leader because Rome allowed it. Also understand, nobody likes being oppressed by an empire. Hopefully you understand that. And so a Jewish person, a Jewish family living in the land of Israel during this time did not like the fact that Rome was oppressing them, that there were Roman soldiers. And we've talked about this before. One of the rules was if a Roman soldier comes up to you as a non-Roman citizen and says, you need to carry my gear, you are required by law to carry their gear for 1 mile. And it was heavy. If you refused to do that, you would be killed. And then Jesus kind of changed that and said, look, if they force you to go 1 mile, go the second mile. Go 2 miles with them. And that's because Roman authority, nobody liked the fact that Rome was in control. And this guy, not only is he not part of the royal line, the kingly line, but Rome put him there. He is working on behalf of Rome. Also, not a good thing. Not a very happy sight for him. And so he was ruling as the representative under Caesar Augustus. As far as his religion, he called himself King of the Jews. He actually did one interesting thing, and that was he rebuilt the temple. One of the temple that we talk about back in the wall series that last year, and it was torn down, and then Ezra led a return and rebuilt the temple, and Nehemiah rebuilt the temple walls. And the temple was again destroyed, and that was in the history between then and now. And Herod actually spent, I don't know how much it would have been, but lots and lots of money to rebuild the temple. And apparently they said it was more magnificent than the one that Solomon had originally built. Why does that matter? Because the temple is the place where Jewish people worship. And so again, his politics were, I know what I'll do. I know I don't belong here. I know I'm working on behalf of Rome. I'll rebuild their temple. That'll make them feel good. That'll make him happy and pleased with me. But he didn't actually worship at the temple. And he used the high priest, which was the kind of the one in charge of the temple. He used him for his own personal gain. If he would marry someone and wanted to appease that person, he often made, and this happened a number of times, he made that wife's brother, oh, you're the new high priest. Hey, kick out the old high priest. So the high priest, the role of the temple, had nothing to do with actually worshiping God. It had nothing to do with actually being obedient to him and giving him the worship he was due. He used it for his own political gain as a way to make the people happy. And they knew that. Everybody can spot a fake. If you think you're making it through, it's not true. People see it. And they knew that about Herod, that he was a fake. And then finally, his reign. Here's where it gets really good. What kind of a ruler was he? He was the great. He was an awful, awful ruler. He was an incredible ruler. His reign was terror. Basically, he killed anyone who was a threat. If there was a threat to his kingdom, to his rule, that person was killed, including one of his wives. He married her. She seemed to be a challenge to the throne. Killed her. His two favorite sons. Turned out that it was a misunderstanding that these two sons were interested in the throne. It actually had nothing to do with them. It was their grandmother that was saying something. And he killed these two sons because they were a threat. Anybody that got in his way, he killed. Here's an interesting little fact. So at this point in his life, he's old, which you'll see in a moment. So he's nearing death just by age. They say he might have had a couple of diseases. There's some things going on there. But he knew he was getting old. He knew he was nearing death. So what he did is he ordered his soldiers to round up about 1,000 Jewish leaders. Because he is the king of the Jews in Israel, in the land of Israel. And he had them round up about 1,000 Jewish leaders, not just people, but actual leaders of the Jews, put them in prison. And the instructions were that when Herod died, all of those Jewish leaders were to be killed so that the entire nation was in mourning for their king. So that everybody's sad. And so that was what he did. Thousands of these leaders, just so that everyone around would be like, I'm so sad. Oh, you're upset about Herod too. No, but that was how awful he was. Now, it turned out they actually didn't follow through on that rule. One of his soldiers released the prisoners once he died. But that's the kind of guy that we're talking about here. The Jewish people are not happy. Herod is not a good guy. They don't like the fact that he considers himself king of the Jews. So let's talk about him and this idea of wearing the crown, because the crown was a symbol of authority. The crown was a symbol of sovereignty, of the person that wore the crown. They were in charge. The person that wore the crown, they made the rules, and they decided how things went down. They decided what happened. They decided what didn't happen. They decided who lived. They decided who died. The person wearing the crown was in charge. And this Jesus shows up on the scene and totally disrupts Herod's plan. Now, just let's talk about this guy here. This is an aside. This isn't in my notes. But Herod is a well-established leader. And he is freaked out by a baby. Just saying. So, here's why. So, the question is, who wears the crown? First of all, Herod was disturbed. We see in this passage that Herod was disturbed that he wasn't in control. And that's what we see there in the first couple of verses we looked at. He said, the wise men come and say, where is the one? There we go. Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him. So, again, they're going to Herod. They're in Jerusalem, in the capital of Israel, going to the one in charge and says, hey, king, can you tell us where the king is? And again, I said this last week, it would be sort of like, you know, in the election. We had a governor election last month. And it'd be like going to Tom Wolf, who was the current incumbent, and saying, hey, can you help me out here? I need to vote for the other guy. I don't really like you, but how do I vote for the other guy here? I mean, that's what's going on here. So these guys show up to the king of the Jews and say, where is the one born as the king of the Jews? And we looked at this word last week. We have come to worship him. They weren't coming with their guitars to sing a song. They didn't have a band ready to go. The word worship means to bow down in honor of a greater authority. That's the word that is used here. It's not just a song thing. We use worship that way. But these guys were going, hey, can you tell me where the real king is, king? Hey, king, can you tell me where the real king is? Because we want to bow down and recognize this king as authority, as the authority. So this is a problem for a guy that doesn't like anybody challenging his rule. So it says King Herod was deeply disturbed, and the word disturbed is an emotional thing. He's upset about this. This is bothering him that someone is coming to worship the king of the Jews. Deeply disturbed. There was an emotional reaction to the fact that he wasn't in control. Because what's going on here? Whoa. And as we looked at last week, he had to go and ask people, what are these guys talking about? What's going on? And so he was disturbed. Why? Because he wasn't in control. And it bothered him. And there's some questions that we're going to look at later. Do you get bothered when things don't go your way? So, the second thing we see about Herod is that Herod was angry that he wasn't obeyed. Herod was angry. So again, we looked at last week, and this isn't on the screen here. We looked at last week how the wise men went, and then eventually they found Jesus. They followed the star miraculously to that place, to the house where Jesus was. And they worshipped him. And then it said an angel warned them in a dream, don't go back to Herod, because Herod told them, hey, come back and tell me where he is, because I want to worship him too. Right. So they disobeyed Herod, and they went another way. And the interesting thing, geographically, this is a big deal for the Magi, because the way that they came was easy. The way to go away from Herod was a long, crazy, way out of the way kind of trip. Think of it going from, like, I don't know, Burnham to Lewistown and going over Jack's Mountain to get there. Like, that's the kind of deal that we're talking about here, way out of the way. But they disobeyed Herod, and he was angry about this. Again, who's in control here? Herod is. And when someone doesn't follow his instructions, he gets angry about it. And that's what verse 13 to 16 says. It goes on and says, after the wise men were gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, flee to Egypt with the child and his mother, the angel said. Stay there until I tell you to return, because Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. That night, Joseph left for Egypt with the child and Mary, his mother, and they stayed there until Herod's death. This fulfilled what the Lord had spoken through the prophet. I called my son out of Egypt. Now I want to do a quick time out here. Because three times we're going to hear Matthew talk about prophets. Matthew wrote this gospel. A gospel was a particular view of the story of Jesus. There were four guys, shared their four different perspectives. Matthew was a solid religious Jewish guy. And he was sharing his story with other religious Jewish people. And therefore, religious Jewish people, don't say that five times fast, they knew the story of what the prophets had said about this one to come. They knew what we consider to be the Old Testament. They got this. And so when Matthew is sharing the story, he's referring to things that they understand. Around here, if I refer to something about Penn State, that makes sense. We get it. We understand Penn State. There would be no reason for me to refer to anything about Alabama, because anybody that's from around here doesn't really care about Alabama. And if they do, like, come on! But anyway, but you understand, so that's context. And so Matthew is speaking to people that understood this language. And so here he shares one story about the prophet. And this was actually from Hosea. And it was talking about how God led the people out of Egypt and called them out of Egypt. And Matthew said, you know, actually, this is also talking about Jesus. And we don't have time to get into that right now. But just so you understand, that's why he keeps talking about the prophets, because he's talking to people that understood this. And that made like, oh, I get it. Okay, then what we're talking about today, Herod was furious. Herod was furious when he realized that the wise men had outwitted him. And he's talking, this furious word is a great. He is greatly furious. He is really, really angry. The word is not a calm word. This is a, you make one more move, you might go to prison kind of angry. This is, you make one more move, you might actually hurt yourself or someone else, kind of angry. That's the word that we're talking about. Herod was furious, and this translation says that the men had outwitted him, but the word actually has to do with the idea of mocking someone else. Herod was furious because he looked like an idiot, because someone didn't obey his command, because he is Herod the Great. He is in control. He is the king, and it better go his way. And when it didn't go his way, he was furious about it. And so then that's the question that we'll come back to in a moment. But do you get angry when things happen, when God's plan doesn't fit your plan? Do you get mad at others? Do you get mad at God? Well, this is how I want it to be, because I'm wearing the crown. And God's like, no, you're not. And so we get angry. We'll come back to that. So Herod was angry that he wasn't obeyed. And then the third thing here is that Herod was compelled. Things didn't go the way he wanted them to go. It wasn't fitting his plan. He is the king. He is Herod. And so he was compelled to take matters into his own hands. I will solve this. I will fix it. It's not the way I want it, so it's my job to make it the way I want it. And so what did Herod do? In verses 16, it says, he sent soldiers to kill all the boys in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old and older, based on the wise men report of the star's first appearance. So the wise men that came to him, we talked about them last week, said, you know, it was about 2 years ago, maybe it was a year and a half ago. He was adding an extra 6 months just to be safe, because he wanted to make sure that this child was dead, because he doesn't want a threat to his throne. So you know what, let's just not kill the one, let's kill them all. Now, before we start thinking about like Holocaust kind of numbers, when a group of Jews are killed, it was more likely about a couple of dozen. Bethlehem was a small, tiny town. There was no room in the inn when this family came in. And so it was probably a few dozen kids that were killed. But even still, like, if that was one of your kids, I mean, come on, that's a big deal. And he ended up killing these children in the town of Bethlehem and the vicinity around, the boys, that were 2 years young of age and younger, because it was a threat to his kingdom. So that was his response. Of course, God had already been working and had sent Joseph out of there with Mary and Jesus before it got to that point. And then this says, another little aside from Matthew, Herod's brutal action fulfilled what God had spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. A cry was heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning. Rachel, which is another word for Israel, is a synonym, and there's the whole reason why. But Rachel weeps for her children, refusing to be comforted, for they are dead. So here's a prophet in Jeremiah talking about, and actually what Jeremiah was talking about was a completely different leader. It was Nebuchadnezzar, who was in charge of Babylon, and he was ravaging Israel at that time. And Matthew says, you remember that story? You remember what Jeremiah was saying? That's actually talking about Jesus. And a Jewish person is going, oh, so maybe he is the one, as we talked about the very first week, the promised one, the Mashiach, the Messiah, the Christos, the Christ, the one that everyone has been waiting for to make things right. So Herod was compelled to take matters into his own hands because it didn't go his way. And again, let me ask you, if God's plans don't go your way, do you feel it's your responsibility to step up and fix it? And maybe you don't feel it's your responsibility, but do you just step in and do it anyway? I don't care. I'm doing it my way. We'll get back to that as well. So the question here, who wears the crown, right? Herod's plan was disrupted by this baby that showed up because he knew, understood, here's this guy who actually might be an heir to the throne. And an heir to the throne is always a threat to the person on the throne. I mean, if you know anything about Lord of the Rings, in the Return of the King, you had Denethor, who was the steward of Gondor. He was the one taking care of the throne. Sorry, this is going to be a major spoiler. You had your shot. He was the one in charge of, it's called Return of the King. Put the pieces together, people. He was in charge of the throne. He was caring for the throne, but he wasn't the real king. The real king was Aragorn. And when he heard that Aragorn was coming back to take the rightful throne, that threatened Denethor. And that's what's going on here. The rightful king is coming along. But here's the crazy thing, right? Herod's upset. His plans are disrupted. He is the king. He wears the crown. He is in control. What he says goes. But guess what happened? Herod has died. Herod is not alive right now. Herod was not alive for very long after this took place. Herod's dead. Why? Because Herod is not the king. Herod is not the one who wears the crown. But Jesus is still alive. 33 years later, he died, and then he rose again and is alive today. And so you want to talk about who's wearing the crown. We want to talk about trying to wear the crown ourselves. I would love it. I mean, if you can pull it off, die and come back to life and live forever, I'll give you my crown. I will. Like, that's a big deal. And that's what Jesus has done. And so you've got Herod, who is so upset because he is being threatened. Oh, I guess I'll just read the passage here just to clarify. It says, when Herod died, so that means Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt. Get up, the angel said, take the child and his mother back to the land of Israel because those who are trying to kill the child are dead. So Joseph got up. Got up and returned to the land of Israel with Jesus and his mother. But when he learned that the new ruler of Judea was Herod's son, Archelaus, he was afraid to go there. Time out again. Herod had actually multiple sons, killed two of them, so there were three that were left to reign in his place. His will actually said that Archelaus was going to be in charge of kind of a small part of the area, and there was another son, Antipas, which we'll talk about when we get to Herod number two in Extras part two in April. Herod Antipas, another son, he was in charge of a different area in the land of Galilee. And then there was another son, Herod Philip. And Philip, it was Philip the second, he was also one. He actually founded a city called Caesarea Philippi, because you never found a city and you don't name it after Caesar first because you'll get dead. So we called it Caesar Philip. And you actually hear about this book called Philippi, when a guy wrote a letter from there, a church he planted in the church in Philippi, and the letter was called Philippians, written by Paul. So there's Philip there. So there were three sons, and Archelaus, there was actually some evidence that he might have been actually insane. Because of the way marriages worked there, that you would marry someone to get their authority, like you had aunts and uncles marrying nephews and nieces and sisters and all sorts of stuff, and just based on outside of the Bible, based on just history, he seems like a crazy, crazy man. And so he, because of that, Herod's son was there, and there was all this stuff that eventually happened in the backstory between these three sons fighting for who was in charge of Israel after Herod dies. So anyway, he didn't go there. You don't want to be there with the crazy son of the former king that was going to kill you anyway. So he left for the region of Galilee. The family went and lived in a town called Nazareth. Now, Nazareth is where we started this story 4 weeks ago. That's where Joseph was from. But it appears that he actually had just, this is a new place. It seems there was no intent to actually go back to Nazareth. For whatever reason, we're not really sure. Maybe it had something to do with he found good employment. I mean, they're living in a house in Bethlehem. Maybe he just, relocated there for the sake of his job. But what's interesting here is then it goes on and says, Then fulfill what the prophets had said, he will be called a Nazarene. Now, just so you know, you're not going to find a passage where this is specifically spoken. And Matthew says prophets, plural, because he's kind of summarizing them. Here's something that's interesting for you to know. Nazarene, we're like, of course, Jesus of Nazareth, Jesus the Nazarene. That was actually like a slam on someone. To call someone a Nazarene was like a cut. It was a tear down. It was a way to mock someone. It was a slanderous word. Because Nazareth was just not a well-known place, you know, and I, depending on where you live, we live in Mifflin County, so we'll be like, oh, you're from Juniata County, I get it. You know, Juniata County people are like, oh, you're from Perry County, okay. You know, they're like, oh, you're a Nazarene. Like, that's kind of that idea, and it had a little bit more than just that, you know, whatever we use culturally today. But it was definitely an insulting term. It was someone that was despised, someone that was rejected was from Nazareth, someone that was called a Nazarene. And, of course, if you read through the prophets in the Old Testament saying this one that was going to come, this Messiah, this anointed one, this Christos, he was going to be despised, rejected. And so that's what this means here. It's not just saying, and they'll be called a guy from Nazareth. Ooh. Like a Delawarean. Hey, I'm in Delaware. Wayne's World. All right, so that's what's going on there. And again, the prophets were talking about this. So again, Matthew's just kind of referring to like, oh, wait a second. Because here, let me just add this. This isn't in my notes either. But because the Jews were under oppression by Rome, when they expected this one to come, they thought he was going to be riding a shiny white horse with his shiny armor and was going to come in and take out Rome. And it'll be like, yeah. But of course, Jesus came just the opposite and submitted and eventually died at the hands of Rome. So that's why Matthew's going through and saying, look, you're misunderstanding things. Jesus isn't coming in here to fix it and all make it all right and to take over. He's coming here to fix the bigger issue, the issue of our hearts, the issue of our sin. So that's what happened. So Jesus disrupted Herod's plan. Herod thought he wore the crown, but really it comes down to that Jesus is the one wearing the crown because he was disturbed that he wasn't in control. He was angry that he wasn't obeyed. He was compelled to take matters into his own hands. But Herod has died, and Jesus is still alive. And so when it comes to deciding who is going to be the king, who is the one that is going to live? Who is the one that truly is in control? And so Herod the Great is in this story to show us that Jesus is the king. He's an extra. This is it. He's done. That's all we read about Herod. Why is he there? Because it shows that this Jesus, like, there's something special. He wasn't just a baby. There was something unique about this that threatened Herod the Great. Why? Because Jesus is the one that's wearing the crown. So, I want to ask you this question, and you're going to have an opportunity to physically do this. And the question is, will you take off your crown? Will you take off your crown? Are you willing to give up your control of your life, of your situation, of what you're going through? And just admit, unlike Herod, that Jesus is actually the king. So, let's just talk about Jesus disrupting your plan. Maybe you need to let Jesus, I don't mean right now, it's okay, we'll get to a chance. Everybody's like, oh, I love Jesus. John clearly does not love Jesus. No, we'll get to that. But the question is out there, will you take off your crown? He's one of our elders. Excellent. Thank you, John, so much. But will you let Jesus disrupt your plan? Because I think all of us need Jesus to disrupt our plan. Because our plan, we think we've got it figured out. And let me tell you, you are not... I'm a planner. I'm a planner of planners. Let me tell you, I've got a plan for this afternoon. We are doing something that's for my birthday because one of my kids was sick on my birthday, so we've got a plan. And at 1 o'clock, that is when we are finishing eating lunch. At 1:15, we will be on the road. We will get to the movie theater by 2:30 so that we can get our tickets, and I'm going to use my gift card that I have and my bonus points to get the free popcorn that I deserve because I need to have 3,000 points, and I have more than 3,000 points for that free popcorn. And then when the movie is over, approximately 5:45 based on the runtime of Aquaman, we will then go over across the street to the Mexican restaurant where we will sit down as a family and enjoy a wonderful Mexican meal and some really good margaritas. But and then, because they are closed for the evening, we will not go over to Bass Pro Shop, as is typically our tradition, because they close at 6 o'clock tonight because it is a Sunday evening. So I'm a planner. And my family is already aware of that plan. I've discussed it multiple times. I'm a planner, and I don't want to take off my crown. I want to be in control. I want things to work my way. I want things to go the way I want them to go. And the problem is, my way is not always the best way. I need to let Jesus disrupt my plan, and I will encourage you, you need to let Jesus disrupt your plan. First of all, you need to understand some things. If you haven't gotten it at this point, you're not in control. You think you are, but you're not. So don't be disturbed when you realize it. Herod got upset. We think we're in control. And I was like, what? I thought I was in control of this. No, you're not. Why are you shocked by this? Why are you shocked when something comes up that changes the plan that you thought you had? And I'm not even saying those are good things. Those could be awful things. But don't be surprised and act like you're in control when you're not. And don't, oh, I'm angry now. Oh, we'll get to angry in a second. But be sad. I'm depressed. It didn't work out the way I thought. I can't handle this anymore. Why? Because you're not in control to begin with, so why are we upset when we realize it? Just like Herod. Second thing is, just like Herod, you're not in control. So don't be angry when it doesn't go according to your plan. I mean, how often? I don't know what you're like. I know that that's my reaction. When it doesn't go according to my plan, oh, I get mad. I get mad at someone. It's usually not me, because it's my plan. But how often do we get angry when it doesn't go our way? And we get angry at God. God, how could you do this to me? And God's going, because I've got something better for you. And it might even take a hard path to get you there. But isn't what's better better than what you think you want? You're not in control, so don't get angry when it doesn't go your way. Because I would bet, and I'm not betting, I'm saying, I believe that God has the best plan for us. And anything outside of that plan is called sin. That's what the word sin means, to miss the mark. God's best is for us. We choose to say, no, I'm going to disobey. I'm going to go my way. I'm going to do my own thing. And we miss out. So you're not in control of this anyway, so don't be angry when it doesn't go according to your plan. The third thing here is, you're not in control, so stop trying to fix things yourself. Sometimes, you guys can just stay here. I'll just talk to my reflection here. Sometimes you need to realize that what God's got going on is better, and you don't need to step in and fix it. You need to trust Him. That's what I need. And some of you need that too. You need to stop trying to fix it. Just say, okay, God, this is hard. God, this is strange. God, this isn't what I had according to my plan. God, I was wearing my crown, but you know what? It's not really mine to wear. And I'm going to trust you through this. Because often our response is, oh, let me go and fix this. I'm going to step in and I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to make it happen. God didn't, so I will. And that comes through cheating, conniving, playing the cards that you have there. There's all sorts of ways that we manipulate people. We manipulate situations. We step in places where God says, no, you're not in control, so stop trying to fix it. And then finally, you're not in control, so submit to the one who is. Jesus is alive. Jesus is in control. Jesus is the King. And instead of trying to fight and make it your way, when God's like, I've got something better for you. Just trust me. Just give up your crown and follow me. Why? Because I live. Because I'm alive. Because I defeated your sin. I defeated death. I am in control, so you can trust me with this. But we're like, that's, yeah. Well, what did you do last week? Because I figured some things out last week too. Jesus. It's time to submit and just give up and say, you know what? It's time to take off the crown and say, this isn't my crown to wear. I'm not in control. I am not the king. I am not the sovereign ruler of my life or the universe. And we need to take it off and trust that Jesus is. So now we're going to talk about actually taking off those crowns. But I want to talk about six crowns that we wear. Six crowns that we wear. And, you know, maybe you don't wear any of these, and maybe you're always giving away control to Jesus all the time, and you're good at that. And that's, that's great. If you can do that, let me know how. But I think a lot of times we're wearing these crowns, and we're not taking them off. We're not giving them to Jesus. We're carrying them ourselves. And here's just six things. There's nothing biblical or not unbiblical about these, but just some things to challenge your thinking about. What crowns do you wear? The first crown is the crown of power. And this is what we're talking about, this idea of fixing things. This idea that it's your job to make it right. This is the idea that your job to step in. If it doesn't go the way it was supposed to, I need to step in because I'm in control. I have the power and I need to make it happen. And sometimes there is responsibility, you know, okay. But sometimes we use responsibility as a control freak. You know, that's spiritualizing the fact that you're a control freak. That's spiritualizing the fact that you think it needs to go your way, and if it doesn't go your way, God must have done something wrong. And we have this crown of power where we feel like it's our job to do it. And I'm telling you, there are some of you that should stop doing things that you have no business doing. They are God's responsibility, but you keep putting on the crown and taking control. And some of you need to give up the crown of power. It's time to stop. Stop trying to do stuff. Stop trying to make things happen. Stop trying to force the situation, fix the situation, and just trust Jesus. The second crown is the crown of partnership. Taking relationships into your hands. And this is the idea of this, you know, I need to have someone. I need to have people in my lives. And some of you, and I have notes here. Some of you are entering or in an unhealthy relationship because you feel like you need to have a friend. And if God didn't give you the friend according to His plans, or a partner, or a whatever, a spouse, a friendship, a school mate, then you're going to take it into your own hands and go, you know what? I know God says this, but I need this. So I'm doing it my way. Some of you are trying to exit a relationship because you feel like, I need to be happy. This is what God wants me to be happy. Maybe God just wants you to obey Him. Maybe God just wants you to trust Him. Maybe God just wants you to say, follow what I've got and it will work out. It doesn't mean it's easy and it doesn't mean you're going to be happy, but it might mean you have to work at it and suddenly things will get to the place where they need to be. But we have this idea that, well, relationships, I've got to fix this. I've got to make it happen. Give me that crown. Because God, you're not big enough to fix that. You're not big enough to make me happy. You're not big enough to give me the person that I need. And I will tell you, this is a crown that I wore for years in high school and college. And honestly, and I'm not trying to be all boastful, but there was a point where I finally said, you know what, God? I got to stop. I dated lots of people, and that's a whole other long story. And I finally got to the spot and said, God, you know what? It's not about me finding the right person. It's about me being the right person and trusting you. And I am telling you, it wasn't just a few months that I met this amazing woman that I am so in love with. And we have an amazing, incredible marriage. We're going to be celebrating 20 years this coming July. And it's not always easy. Sometimes one of us says things they shouldn't say. And sometimes the other one does too. But there's a part where we say, I'm trusting God for this. And so we say, okay, I'm going to follow what you've got. And some of you need to give up the crown of partnership, trying to force relationships, and instead you need to obey God. The third thing is the crown of passion. And this is the idea of letting your emotions control you. Sometimes we're like, but it just doesn't feel good. It doesn't make me happy. Can we just take a moment just to consider if every person always did, and frankly, our culture is heading there, did what makes them happy? I tell you what I would be doing. Well, I see the problem is I couldn't even do what I want to do to make me happy because I at some point need to like eat And at some point need to take care of my body, and at some point need to sleep. And it's not like, so, and we have this idea, but we allow our emotions to control us. We allow them to dictate where we are. We mope in our own self-pity. Oh. And we put this crown on. We go, God, this isn't the way it's supposed to be. And God says, I know. Stop carrying it around. It's not yours. Let me control you. Let me guide you. Let me lead you. And we allow our emotions, or our anger, or our excitement. I mean, all these things are emotions, and we can't let our emotions control us. We talked about that in the No Filter series last spring. Letting our emotions take over is like a drunk person who decides to get behind the wheel of a car. They're not in control. And we need to give up the crown of passion. We need to stop allowing our emotions to control you. And understand that you're a child of God. God loves you. God sent his son to die for you. You don't need to be wearing the crown of passion. Then there's the crown of provision, obsessing over money. And this is the idea that you think it's your job to provide for you. You think it's your job to provide for your family. And I am telling you, it is not, no matter what you do, no matter what happens, it is not your job to provide for you or provide for your family. God always is providing for you. And maybe that means stepping into a position you're like, I don't really like this job, but maybe God's opened a door and you're going to do it. Maybe it's stepping out of something because you're like, I need to do this. I need to carry it. No, I need to provide this. I need money. I need to have stuff. I need more money. I need to fix this problem. I need to solve this thing because I need to get that thing. I need to own that house and have that car and have that phone and get those other devices. And we're like, because I need it and I'm going to do it, God. It's my job to provide for all these things. And God says, no, it is not. God says, it's my job to provide for you. Your job is to obey me. Your job is to submit and hand off the crown. And then the other side of this is not just working too much. It sacrifices your health, sacrifices your spiritual growth. The other side of this is we start cutting corners. We start doing things that are not appropriate because, well, I need money for this. Or I need to make this happen. So that little form on my tax doesn't really mean as much. And we cut corners. And God says, no, it's not your job to fix this. It's your job to trust me. That is our job. Because God, Jesus is the King, not us. The fifth crown is the crown of performance. And this is looking good for everyone else. Some of us feel like it's our job to look good. It's our job to make sure that we are perfect. It's our job to make sure that everything looks right. And we can't fake it, or we do fake it, but we can't let anyone see through the fact that we are not perfect. And we carry this crown and we go, no, I need to look good for everyone else. We hide our true feelings and failures. We're not real, and we hide these things from our family, from our friends, from our church, thinking that it's our responsibility to be the perfect example. And let me tell you something. You can't save anyone's eternity. Only Jesus can. And we need to get to the spot where we're stopping performing, we stop being fake, we're being real. Because when real happens, there's a song by Switchfoot called the cracks is where the light shines through, right? Cracks. That's where you can get light in when you're suddenly able to be real and say, I'm struggling with this issue. And let God work on you and let God fix it. But we're going, no, I need to look good, everything's perfect, I'm fine. And let's just be real. We need to give up the crown and say, I'm done performing. I'm done trying to make everyone think that I'm good, that I've got it all together. Because you don't. Stop faking it. And faking it is exhausting. Some of you need to take off the crown of performance. And finally, the crown of perfection. And this is the idea that you feel like you need to impress Jesus. Where you need to be good enough for God to accept you. For Jesus to love you. And I need to be perfect. I need to do gooder things. I need to go to church more. If I show up on Sunday, maybe God will be pleased with me now. I did that nice thing. I put money in the kettle outside of Walmart. God will be happy with me now. And let me tell you, I've said this plenty of times. There is nothing you can do to make God love you more. And there is nothing that you can do to make God love you less. Jesus says, I understand you're not perfect. I understand you're broken. That's why I died on the cross for you. Paul writes in his letter to the church in Rome. He says, while we were sinners, while we were still broken, that's when Jesus died for us. And some of you need to give up the crown of perfection. Stop trying to be good enough. Stop trying to fake it or work your way through. Be good enough for Jesus and work your way to God. And Jesus says, you can't do enough. Just like you can't jump from here to Europe, no matter how impressive your jump skills are. You can't do it. So some of you need to take off the crown of perfection and just let Jesus save you. Let Jesus fix your eternity, trusting Him. So those are six crowns. Maybe you don't wear any of those crowns. Maybe I just invented them up and I wear all of them. Maybe I do. At some points I do a lot. But what I want you to do, and we're going to turn off the house lights, it's going to be a little dark, but you have a pen and you have a crown. And what I'd like you to do, and this is, you don't have to fake it, you know, maybe if you're about to fake what you're about to do, we got some issues here. But which crown are you wearing? Which crown do you need to give up? Which crown do you need to take off and leave it with Jesus? Because he's in control. Because he's the king. Is it the crown of power? The crown of partnership? The crown of passion? The crown of provision? The crown of performance? The crown of perfection? And I want you to write that on here. You don't have to write your name. You don't have to do anything else. And we're going to give you a few minutes just to think through that process. Maybe God's leading you, like, you know what? This is something I really need to work on. Like, let Christmas be about something that matters, not about gifts and worry and crazy and busy. Let it be about saying, Jesus, you're in control. You're the king. And so I want you to write that down on here. What is the crown that you're wearing that you shouldn't be? And then the band, after a few minutes, they're going to lead us in a song about crowning Jesus. And I'm just going to give you an opportunity. There's nothing fancy here. Just to come up front and as a symbol of saying, you know what, I'm taking this crown off. Just throw your crown right here on the floor. And then go back to your seat. We're going to sing it. You can sing with us. You can pray. You can come up front and just leave your crown here. And say, Jesus, this isn't my crown. I'm not the king. You are. And I'm leaving it here. I'm trusting you for all these things instead of trying to control it myself. So we'll give you a few minutes to do that, and then the band will lead this last song. And indeed, you are the God who reigns forever. And we have just placed our crowns before you, Jesus, because you are the king and we are not. And I know that there is nothing special or miraculous about what we have done here. This is a symbol. But God, what happens in our hearts because of what you, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, has done and can do in this moment, it is miraculous. And so I pray that this will be the Christmas that we remember, not because of all the stuff and the gifts and the things we got, but because this was the Christmas where we made you king of our lives, not just king, but king of everything that we are. God, I pray for each person in this room that has placed a crown here before you. Pray that your Holy Spirit will allow us and give us the ability to stop and or even to remember, because we're going to put them back on, to take them off in that moment and give the crown to you and let you be in control. Thank you for being good enough to do that. Thank you for being alive enough that this isn't just an act, but this is something that matters because the King of Kings died for us and then rose again, showing us that you are indeed in control. Thank you, Jesus. We love you. In your name we pray. Amen.